FU Network. Yeah, it's about an attitude, but FU stands for us. Us, regular people, making the type of authentic, honest, down-to-earth programming that big media stomped out of existence. Well, our message to big media is FU. Come on, join the team. Reclaim our media for the common people. Become a supporter for $5 a month via Patreon or PayPal. Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. That's Patreon.com/FU Network TV or PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Come on, $5 a month? That's $1.50 a week to rebuild real Canadian media. You drop more than that every day on overpriced coffee. Yeah, you do. So if you like our podcasts, tell big media FU and cough up a fin. Now, here's your show.
The Broken Clock Podcast returns, and I'm surprised we haven't done this topic before now, but why is the internet the place reason seems to go to die? As usual, I am here with my partner in thought crimes, Mouse Mary Jest, and Mouse, we both spend a lot of time online.
Yes, we do.
Obviously, we do. We deal with our own different sorts of interesting and colorful characters, shall we say. Not surprising, the current troubles of Canada's prime minister didn't reach you down in the US, but we're going to touch a little bit on the We Day, the We Charity stuff. It's such an awful brand name, because it's like you say We and people are like, what are you talking about, a game console? But I want to first touch on Joe Rogan. Not for long, but Joe Rogan is sort of the example. He's like the avatar for this topic, in that Joe Rogan is a very successful podcaster, and I think no one begrudges him that. Success is success. Good for you. You got lucky. But Joe Rogan, for people who don't know, is a former stand-up comedian, current UFC commentator, and podcaster, who said video games were a waste of time, and described them as a real problem. He said he went on to say, you do them and they're really exciting, but you don't get anywhere. You could be doing something exciting and fun, or you could just be playing effing video games.
You mean like watching people get hit in the head?
Or a podcast where he changes his mind as often as people change their socks, rambles about nothing for a very long time. And even though he describes himself as a left-leaning libertarian, claimed that he would have voted for Bernie Sanders, but he wants to vote for Trump over Biden because Biden is too old and essentially talks funny. Joe Rogan is not a smart man.
God, no.
That's an understatement. Joe Rogan is a guy who got incredibly lucky, and like so many people who label themselves libertarians, spends an inordinate amount of time telling other people how to live their lives. And of course, anybody thinking about this for a few minutes could say the same thing about podcasting or watching sports or things like UFC. I don't know if you'd call UFC a sport, but I'll go there. Okay, it's a sport. But you don't personally gain anything by watching a UFC bout. I mean, most people who watch UFC will not go on to become UFC fighters. So this just sounds to me like his personal thing. He doesn't know how to moderate certain activities. Apparently, he really always hated doing voiceovers for the UFC video games. So this was his... Instead of just saying, I don't like doing the voiceovers, so I don't want to do the voiceovers in the games anymore, he has to find something inherently wrong with the game or games in general. It's a thing people do when I find they're feeling guilty about a decision they're making. But for him to go on a widely, widely listened to podcast and say something so provably ridiculous And he won't suffer any consequences for this. He'll just go on. It'll be disposable like everything else he says. And I think that's kind of the core to his success. What do you think, Mouse?
I do think that Joe Rogan is in many ways the embodiment of the zeitgeist that we're unfortunately stuck with. He is a hot topic button sensationalist who, you know, I don't think he is as dumb as you think. Well, the man is a slab of meat. Mm-hmm. If he were any dumber, you'd have to put him in the refrigerator to keep him fresh. But he is cunning.
Yes.
And what he does is he sticks his finger in the air and runs in the direction that the wind is blowing. In this, he is very, very much like Bill O'Reilly over at Fox News, who was also one of the most detestable people, and in many ways one of the people who shaped, if you could call it a shape, something that is so terribly misshapen,
Isn't Bill O'Reilly doing podcasting now too?
I think so. I God, he is ready. Come on, take him from us, because it's just. But Bill O'Reilly is in great part is one of the people who has shaped public discourse into this sort of grand guignol, little shop of horrors that we have here. And
right.
Joe Rogan is kind of a minor, because he's not as thoroughly outrageous or thoroughly as morally reprehensible as Bill O'Reilly, but he exhibits that same kind of, you know, shock jock. I will, you know, changes his outward opinions based on just how much he can shock, how much he can be controversial. And so in many ways, he is following the one of the 48 laws of power. If you've never read that book, it's a book written by the devil.
Yeah.
It's essential. I think that book is essential reading for everyone. Not because I think you need to practice what's in there, even though there are one or two pieces of advice there that can actually be used in a morally good sense, but
right.
99% of the book is essentially how to become a horrible person who uses people as resources instead of being people.
Ironically, didn't Kanye West reference that book right as he was going off his meds again this most recent
yes.
time? Yeah, okay.
Yes, unfortunately, this book... This horcrux of a book is very, very popular among the right. Big surprise, right?
Yeah, also big surprise, it doesn't work as well as the authors claim it does.
Well, in order for it to work as well as it should, you have to be a complete sociopath.
Yes.
Yeah. Because there are things in that book that will, even if you have a tiny amount of scruples remaining, you will feel squeamish.
Yeah.
However, the book is an excellent way, reading The Laws of Seduction and reading The Laws of War, which are the trinity of awfulness that Robert Green, Nathan Green, he's a green guy, has written, is an excellent way of learning to arm yourself against people who put those things into practice
for other people who have read that book.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In many ways, it does appeal to people with sociopathic impulses, narcissists. Unfortunately, this book arms these people with tools that they can use.
Yeah.
Joe Rogan does have that narcissistic impulse. He does have this. When you see someone who has changed careers as often as he has with that same kind of drive and impulse, there's a little bit of, you know, self-adoration going on there. Someone who is courting the limelight no matter what.
That's an interesting observation.
And so the idiocy that he spews on his podcast is clearly fashioned to attract attention. It's also courting a good number of people who are looking for confirmation bias,
yes.
which is another way that you can earn a following and earn adoration. I have heard people talk about how intelligent he is, whereas if you anyone with any modicum of sense would look at the things that he says, there is no possible way you can see any signs of intelligent life in that universe. He's a reactionary.
Yeah, I often wonder if people determine intelligence on the internet by how much they're in agreement with the speaker.
Well, I had that this weekend. I had a phenomenon like that with someone who was backed up by a group of people who praised who sang the praises of his intelligence. Mm-hmm. This person was talking about how the cancel culture was a violation of the First Amendment and its specific people's freedom of speech rights. Now, he wasn't talking about the government censoring.
No.
Stepping in and saying, no, you can't say that, or we'll jail you, which is what governmental censorship is. He was talking about, in this particular case, he was talking about people alerting comic book publishers of the participation of several individuals with Comicsgate, which is a group of thoroughly dysfunctional people on the internet.
Is this the Dynamite Comics thing?
It's the Dynamite Comics thing.
Right. One high-profile Dynamite is a publisher. And one high-profile person was found to be... It was less about association with a group and more about their particular stated views. But then other creators on Dynamite went, forget this, I'm out of here. And it caused a kerfuffle. That I'm getting this right? That was the issue.
Right. And then you also had another artist, another issue, because there was an artist who was being published by Dynamite Comics, who... was part of Comicsgate, and she had made a very disturbing practice of calling victims of sexual assault whores and blaming them for being sexually assaulted.
This is less about the label and more about their individual behavior.
Right.
And so, I think that's important to state, because one of the things they claim is they try to make membership in some sort of online hashtag equivalent to some sort of immutable characteristic in real life to create a construct of persecution that then allows them to carry on with impunity. And anyone who disagrees with them, they're like, well, you're just a bigot. Am I right so far? Okay, good, good, good. For people who have who have no idea what Comicsgate is, bless you. I'm tired of gates on the internet. They do nothing but cause trouble for everyone involved, but that's sort of where we're at. So you've got a person who is clearly making a fallacious argument about not only the concept of freedom of speech, but also the First Amendment specifically.
And also self-contradictory, because I brought up the crux of the argument here. Well, in the First Amendment, you have, of course, the protection of speech. You also have the freedom of association that is guaranteed to citizens. That is why you are able to do things like an economic boycott and social ostracism, which are the proper ways to fight a personal moral battle, not a legal one, because if the person is doing something illegal, then that is grounds for the government to step in. Yeah. But if this is a question of moral disagreements, let's say, you suddenly decide to back slavery up. So it is perfectly fine and acceptable for me to campaign towards, don't listen to this podcast because these are the stances that the hosts have, and it's absolutely terrible. Which would lead to social ostracism and people not listening to the podcast, which is actions of the free market.
Right.
People can decide to take their business elsewhere. So this guy was, this guy's argument was basically, well, no, that is an infringement of freedom of speech. And of course, people were chorusing him. Confirmation bias. Yet they could not answer. I asked him this question repeatedly until he just stopped, because he tried to divert the conversation towards other branches.
Right,
calling
right,
me
right.
a leftist, and that I didn't know, take a shot, Ayn Rand.
Yeah, as if that has anything to do with whether you're right or wrong on a particular point.
Yeah. So I asked them, okay, you're saying that this, that what people are doing vis-a-vis Dynamite Comics, Comicsgate, these things people have said and done that is causing artists and writers to say, okay, I'm canceling my, I am walking away from Dynamite. You're saying that this is a violation of freedom of speech. Yet, how can you reconcile this stance that freedom of speech as such, the regulation thereof, extends into the private sphere? That is, if you say that this is a violation of someone's freedom of speech, then it means the government needs to step in.
Right, right.
Right, because that's the stance that you're saying, that that's the stance that you're taking. So how can you reconcile that with the granted freedom of association? Because this interpretation of the First Amendment, of the freedom of speech clause of the First Amendment, is inconsistent with freedom of association.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that? And of course, he couldn't. He kept squirreling away. But of course, the people who were in his corner, who were looking for confirmation bias, mm-hmm. were singing the praises of this man's intelligence, even though he couldn't extricate himself from a self-contradictory argument. And that is the spirit of what causes reason to die on the internet. Joe Rogan is just the latest avatar of that nonsense creature.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is the incredibly partisan political times we live in. And I think that's why politics ends up, especially US politics, ends up in this podcast so often. They're topics that people are aware of, therefore we can show examples of, you know, faults in logic, critical thinking errors, things like that. But I do think there is something in the air right now where it is better to say, this is going to sound really strange, but this is the bumper sticker here, the meme. It is better to say the wrong thing than the wrong thing. By that I mean, it is better to say something that is intellectually bankrupt and provably false, wrong, than to say the thing that violates the moral purity of your given side. You know, if you are a leftist, it is wrong to point out that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez going on about the cost of food at the airport, as if that has anything to do with wages in a regular business, is really the wrong hill to die on. Now, that gets you excommunicated by certain people because you're not allowed to criticize your own. And that I find incredibly frustrating, that certain ideas just become litmus tests for your association with a group. And it is not, you are not allowed to have freedom of, I don't even know what to call it. It's almost freedom of mind. They don't want you even thinking contrary to this. If you do disagree with somebody, they certainly don't want you saying it. Everybody is behaving as if they're a political operative instead of a person who may prefer one party or the other, but doesn't agree with the given platform 100% at any given time. And
well, it's an extension of the culture war mentality.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what the culture war mentality is anymore, other than we live in an age where people feel like they're falling further and further behind. And so the only thing they have is these amorphous concepts of what makes them comfortable, and any attack, any perceived attack on what makes them personally comfortable is treated like an attack on themselves. It's strange. Like, they changed the gender of a main character on a TV show from a book or a comic book, and this causes weeks and weeks and weeks of outrage. But
or you have a gay character suddenly become the lead in a comic, or they change the character's ethnicity.
Right.
And
yeah, the Little Mermaid.
Or they put
The Little Mermaid is played by a black singer. and people get mad at me because I'm not bothered by this. Yeah, like, because for people who don't know, I have red hair.
They're like, my childhood.
Yeah, and like, I mean, God, Thundercats roar, shit up the Thundercats like crazy. I didn't think they took my childhood away, you know, yeah, because I could go back and watch the original cartoon.
Exactly. And I watched a couple of episodes and it's funny. It is actually pretty funny.
Is it?
It is actually pretty funny. The art style bothers me. But that's, I've always been bothered by balloon characters.
Yeah, that I think that to me, I know we're getting on the side there, but I think that one of the things I think I loved as a kid about the original is something so majestic about the art style. Right? It was these athletic, muscular, I mean, Tigra was a gay awakening for a lot of little boys of my generation. It's true.
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to those who, you know, were more into Panthro because he was more butch. But, you know, like, there was a beauty, there was an elegance, there was a power to that animation style, and then they turned them into blobs. To me, it's not so much that I'm personally offended, it's more how stupid and incapable people now think children of the same age are.
Yeah.
And I think that might be some of it, that when people, I mean, Betty Friedan talked about in The Feminine Mystique, the fact that the minute women are challenged, it's usually, you know, university, college, the first time a woman is actually intellectually challenged because, you know, women are infanticized. And the minute something becomes hard, the minute they start feeling intellectual stress, they quit because that's what they've been taught to do. And Betty Friedan was writing this to try to stop that from happening with women. What seems to have happened instead is that now that happens.
It is a common practice
everyone.
For everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what the majority of people do when something starts causing them any sort of intellectual anxiety. They just shut down and run away from it.
Well, universities have stopped being a place where you go to get challenged. You know, it pretty much starts in primary school.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it's Ecuador had a different system than the U.S. We had pretty much everything was primary school, and then you had high school,
yeah,
which was 6 years of high school. Can you imagine that hell?
What is it now? Is it down to four?
I think they've gone closer to the U.S. system. I don't know because I don't have any. Well, I do have a niece who is that age, but she doesn't talk. She's not very very chatty.
Okay.
Where as opposed to my two nephews, who can't get them to stop talking. In a good sense, they're good kids.
Because I mean, it was 5 years of high school when I was in school. It's down to four now.
Four now.
Yeah.
But one thing that I've observed in the United States, in particular, you have the school pensum is so politicized. Because it's you have the government in charge of what is being taught to children. Because and you know, thank you, W, for No Child Left Behind.
Yeah.
So the I think that the name of that program was very, very, very honest because children got dragged. Not a single one was left behind from getting dragged, because now you have teachers who teach the test.
Yes.
And so you have this entire generation of, they're not scholars, they're not thinkers, of not just one generation, several. This has been going on for a while, of parents.
Yeah, just tell me what to say, I'll say it.
And so you have school districts with certain, you know, political leaning, and of course you have reactionary parents who themselves were brought up as parrots. And so by the time the child is ready to go to university, you can choose either, many public left-leaning universities or private, extremely right-leaning colleges. Which often have a very, very, you have bias, extreme bias in both. And with this politicized divide, then they sort of become more like headquarters of particular ideologies as opposed to a ground for scholarly and civilized debate.
They're recruiting grounds.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
for various political parties.
Because, and you saw the, for example, you saw that such a thing is possible when I was speaking. When I had that discussion with that young girl who identified herself as a more on the Marxist anarchist political spectrum.
Didn't she actually have it in her screen name? Like her username was something Marxist?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and of course, people who hear me on this podcast would think, oh, well, he got into a screaming match with them. No.
No.
The reason why is because even though she had, I would say, 90% of political opinions that I disagreed with, we just had a conversation.
Yeah.
And it was refreshing for me because it was the kind of conversation I am most accustomed to. What we're currently experiencing on the internet and in culture is something I'm not terribly accustomed to. It's this screaming down the door because, again, my mother was very much a bohemian.
Right.
And so she rubbed shoulders with all sorts of intellectuals. Even though she herself was left-leaning, she had very conservative friends, as well as very liberal friends. And of course, every bohemian circle has the anarchist,
right?
Who's wearing the turtleneck, and the beret, and is smoking the off-brand cigarettes,
right?
And you know, jumps into the conversations, you know, with an observation that suddenly changes the entire scope of the conversation, and people are going, "Well, no, I don't." You know, that sort
yeah,
of thing.
That's yeah, they can all agree that guy's wrong.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's what I grew up with. I did not. The only shouting matches I ever got into were with my brother, but my brother's an idiot.
That's a topic for another day. Takes hours and hours to unpack there.
Yeah, I showed you one of his articles, and yeah.
Yeah. But,
so.
Yeah, but you're on to something. I mean, there used to be, I mean, was it Reagan and Tip O'Neill? Was that like back in the day, they were on opposite sides of practically every fight. They were friends in person and they could actually get together and get stuff done. And I find
And Scalia and Ginsburg.
Well, Scalia and Ginsburg, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, fewer people know about that friendship. I do think
they made an opera about it.
Which hasn't been able to be performed because of COVID, and I'm so bummed. But anyway, again, topic for another time. But the Supreme Court, to me, is a real example of adulting. That, you know, I'm sure that Kagan, Ginsburg, and Sotomayor gave, what's his name, Kavanaugh, a pretty rough couple weeks. I'm sure there were subtle moments of, you're not going to do this stuff here, right? But after that, everything settled in and they have a job to do and they do it and they recognize that the entire point of the Supreme Court is the different people from different ideological backgrounds are on the same body. And you can't treat them like an enemy. They are your colleagues. They have to work together. And these are people who are making the most important consequential decisions of our time because legislative government is locked up and completely dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And they manage to make it work, even though, I mean, it's interesting because Gorsuch and Kavanaugh are very, very set in different types of conservative thought. People think, oh, they're both Trump appointees. They must think the exact same things. They're very, very different scholars. Gorsuch has that corporations are people mentality, and he's very into just giving corporations a lot of, like, that kind of crony corporatism that a lot of people think is capitalism. But, you know, the point is they manage to get stuff done because they have to. There's for a similar reason, a lot of military people are decidedly apolitical. They may vote a certain way. Some people don't vote because they have to serve whatever person gets elected. And so they're like, I don't want to be bitter about that. I know a lot of federal law enforcement, at least in Canada, that doesn't vote. People in law enforcement tend to have a low opinion of anybody who's in power. They are not staunchly conservative, as a lot of people think. They just don't like politicians. And I guess that's a good way to seg into what's going up here, because some people complain we don't talk enough about Canadian content. Sorry, guys. Canadian politics just isn't as stupid as American politics these days. But we have found something.
And it's about what's going to come up. Yeah. I wish the U.S. were still at the point where what we're going to talk about was considered a scandal.
Right. And I have worked very hard not to immediately say this is not terribly important because look at the US, right? I'd be forgiven for that. It is hard because we know it can be worse. But setting that aside, this whole We Day thing, or We or whatever you call it, it's a terribly named charity. It has always driven me crazy. Full disclosure, I hate these do good public work so you can get into concerts forms of youth charities. I despise them. The idea that you should participate in something that is civically responsible so that you can get stuff really, really, really irks me. So I have a bias against the We organization, whatever it's been called, whatever it will be called, because I suspect it will rebrand after this whole scandal. But
most likely.
Yeah. What has basically happened, for people who don't know, is that they're in the mad scramble to roll out COVID-19 relief programs. The responsibility for distributing funds for students that go work jobs that are normally done by, say, migrant workers, things like that, jobs that society needs but don't necessarily pay well. They're trying to get students to do those, and then the government tops up the wages so that they can do the jobs that need to get done while still earning a wage that makes it make sense to them. That's the program that was awarded to this charity called We. Now, We has a lengthy and very public association with not just the Trudeau family, but numerous other politicians, some liberal, some conservative. But, you know, the wealth and politics tend to intersect. And much ado has been made of the fact that they were awarded this contract. And Justin Trudeau, who has done work for them himself, his wife does a podcast for no compensation, but his mother and brother have done speaking gigs at totally fair market rates. His mother is a speaker on mental illness based on her own experiences when Justin Trudeau's father was prime minister. But because the mother and brother were associated with this charity, they expected Trudeau to recuse himself from the rubber stamp process that a committee basically decided that this We charity was the right fit. And they're like, fine, do it. Our finance minister as well, Bill Morneau. This one I think has a bit more weight. I still think it's being overstated, but his daughter works for We. Now, that I think does warrant a recusal. Do I think this is a mistake? Yes. Do I think this is a mistake that people should lose their jobs over? What the fuck are you on? You know, I don't normally come down that hard on something like this because, like I said, it is a mistake. But considering the circumstances with COVID-19, with everything being a scramble, with everything being done very, very quickly, and with at least one political party wanting to force everyone back to work I should say who it is. The conservatives want to force everybody back to work. And it being a minority government situation, nobody wants to go to a snap election right now for many, many, many reasons. This is a utterly ridiculous scandal. It should have been an embarrassment for a week. It should not have been something that caused a bunch of board members on We to resign and all this crazy stuff and saying that Trudeau should resign and Morneau should resign. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Anybody who knows how government works, oh, there's the problem, right? Mm-hmm. People getting upset about this don't actually know how these contracts are sourced. And so they're just, you know, somebody I feel is like me is saying I should be outraged and saying this is a very bad thing. I'm going to say that I'm outraged and this is a very bad thing. It's basically an authority figure is telling me I should be upset. Therefore, I'm going to be upset. And now, Mouse, you looked at this as an outsider. Did you see anything I didn't? Am I hand-waving this away just because, oh God, Trump's terrible? Or, like, what's your take on this whole thing?
Well, in order to answer that, you just have to put yourself back in a pre-Trump outlook. you know, to the, if I could turn back time.
Well done.
And it just had to happen because it's Monday. A little bit of Cher helps every now and then. Even though she has been replaced by now by 90% prosthetics, and she's probably a cyborg. but that's okay. I'm totally fine with dance hits, singing cyborgs.
But Chaz Bono is so adorable, and she had something to do with making him, so I'm good with Cher.
I know. Chaz is adorable.
Chaz is adorable.
And here's the thing. When you have to... To have some perspective, you do have to extract yourself from the current malaise that is contaminating everything, that is the Trump movement. And we have to go back to trying to remember the calm of September. No, I'm in the wrong song now. But try to remember what the environment was like, because we cannot have it so that morality and ethics change just because one party or certain individuals
have dragged it
through the mud, and so that we are now in a situation where we are responding to the absolute worst examples, and that has become the new baseline. So when I looked at this, scandal, I tried to put myself into that place.
It's surprisingly hard, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
That's what you have to think. That's what you have to abstract. Go back to first principles. And, you know, remember, well, you know, within the government, you know, what is a standard of ethics, etc.
Right.
You could, so my take on this is that this is, you know, it could be considered an ethics violation. Most likely because of how, because of current situations and because everything is on fire, everything is pretty much rushed. When it comes to standard government procedures, and like, say, and I had to bring this up because the Trump administration is kind of an exception to this rule. The majority of time that you have something minor going wrong, such as an ethics violation of this caliber, is definitely there's conflicts of interest, etc., that have been put in place. It is not a major
thing. Okay. Yeah.
I do think that following procedure, if someone needs to be fined and for expenses, whatever, you have to follow the proper procedure. Some people need to distance themselves or whatever, but not flushing the toilets and basically just flashing everything down.
Yeah, if anything, I think that some staffers in the prime minister's office and the finance minister's office may need to go, because they're the ones that are there to prevent them from making these mistakes.
Yeah, and you know, Trudeau does share his a share of the burden in this, because he is aware of his family's connections.
Yeah, he's apologized for this. He says he feels very badly about it, in part because now it's going to slow down the disbursement of funds. This is his Achilles heel as a politician. He has grown up, you know, with the Aga Khan as a family friend, and so on and so forth. Sometimes he has blind spots about what's going to look really bad to middle-class people.
Right. And you have to draw up an interesting comparison here, because on the U.S. side of things, we've had this type of thing happening, the conflict of interest thing going on almost on a daily basis, since Trump has appointed so many of his family members to positions. I mean, Ivanka recently just had another violation.
She violated the Hatch Act. Yeah.
She violated. Yeah. So did Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah.
So
over fucking beans.
Over fucking beans. Yes.
Yeah.
And this is the point where, of course, you draw the distinction between incompetence and malice.
Cause right.
There is some incompetence clearly going on in the Canadian government as far as coordinating these things, which has resulted in a breach of ethics.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody would deny that, especially considering current circumstances. Like, otherwise, very competent people are likely making big mistakes right now because everything's insane.
You're right. As opposed to, well...
Yeah.
What is currently going into the United States government, do think there is more malice there than incompetence.
Well, that's
there
part is of the problem, right? They're constantly, you know, we're America's hat in a lot of ways. And so we're sitting on the head of a colicky toddler instead of a properly run
superpower.
Highly militarized superpower, right?
Yes.
And there's all these issues with China, with the Huawei executive and being arrested on the U.S.'s say-so, and Safe First Country agreements. And things are really fraught right now. I'm sure governments are extremely, extremely stretched. That being said, I suspect, having seen some of the ways these decisions are made, it's usually everybody gets in a room, looks at what they have, said, yeah, this looks good, and leaves. So I don't think there's any actual impropriety, but I do acknowledge the appearance of impropriety here. Now, I'm glad you came to the same conclusion I did. We didn't really talk about this much before we came on the air, because I didn't want to push things one way or the other, but if you look at what's going on online, you'd swear this was Watergate, right? Like, you'd swear. But to me, this feels very much like the Canadian conservatives borrowing the American conservative playbook on the Clinton Foundation and Uranium One. Mm-hmm. I can't believe how successful that smear was. You know, whatever you think about the Clintons, they did do a lot to get, say, AIDS drugs to people in developing countries through the Clinton Foundation. And all of a sudden, that organization was a source of evil unto the world. And I know that no one who's not American, double negative, I apologize, can understand the loathing that Americans feel for the Clintons. It's one of those things. It's like how, you know, it's the opposite of how Torontonians love the Maple Leafs, even though the Leafs suck. I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, but the Leafs do suck. They're a mediocre team that should be better with the amount of money they have. But, you know, Torontonians love the Leafs. It's like the opposite. Americans just hate the Clintons. And the rest of us don't know why. And we sort of accept that we don't understand why, because that's a quirk of American politics, right?
Well, I do.
Sorry, go ahead.
Speaking to our common friend who is from Arkansas,
Right.
There are some things I do understand regarding the Clintons. Well, Bill specifically, because for the longest time, it appeared to be a very, very open secret about Bill's philandering ways, but also apparently how he would take advantage of his position to make advances towards women.
Right.
Now, of course, do I think that's primarily the source of hatred for the Clintons? Some people might, people who, you know, who have principle and care about these things would feel outraged that a politician has used his power and his position to, you know, to make sexual advances, and feeling that, of course, he is not as prone to be held accountable.
I personally think people don't get upset enough about stuff like that, personally. But please go on.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Because the majority of the outrage directed at the Clintons is not because of that. And it's not because they would say, well, Hillary was complicit in that by turning a blind eye.
Okay, in fairness, what choice did she have? You know, we got to remember this is 20 years ago now, more. The world was a different place.
God, I feel old.
Yeah, I know. But the world was a different place. People don't realize that if she had not stood by her man, she would have been seen as some kind of harpy shrew who didn't care about her family, which was already how people perceived her. Like, that's the thing. Even before that happened, the stay home and bake cookies line seemed to have sealed Hillary Clinton's fate in the eyes of Americans. And that now would be, yay, hashtag feminism. But back then, ooh, especially in Arkansas, right?
Oh, yeah, especially in Arkansas.
And
gosh, this city screwed up.
Yeah, well, you know, I find it, sorry if you guys hear me sucking on a candy, my throat's really bothering me. So if you hear a strange noise, that's what it is.
But don't forget the pineapple.
Don't forget the pineapple. I got some in the fridge. But certain people, narratives get baked in with them. And I admit, I was very dismayed by the treatment of Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election, because it was another thing that I just felt went way beyond anybody's personal policy disagreements with her. And I think this was partially a failure of her campaign, because a lot of them were former Obama people who had previously run against her and didn't really like her either at the beginning. But, you know, up in Canada, we see somebody who helped get, you know, healthcare for children, and who was a very competent Secretary of State, and who stood up to China long before it was, you know, cool to do so. And people forget that the CHIP program was a participation ribbon for actually attempting to get single-payer healthcare through the U.S. system.
Well, we also have to remember that there were a lot of LGBTQ people who had a grudge towards Hillary because, of course, when Bill Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act.
Right.
For many, many years, even after, you know, once Bill was no longer president and she was on her own in the political spectrum, she still defended that decision until it was, you know, it was considered more acceptable to be against
her. Her political weakness. I think that if she had come out and been, those were my husband's policies, not mine. And yes, I defended them like a good soldier at the time, but I don't agree. I think they were mistakes. I think if she'd done that, she had it done better, but that's not her impulse. And that's her weakness as a candidate. However, nothing explains the hatred of Hillary Clinton to me. Like, disagreement, fine. Nothing explains why people hate Hillary Clinton the way they do.
Well, because she is a woman who at times, not very often, because she still had those impulses back you know, from back in the day, when she was, you know, primarily billed as Bill's wife.
Right.
But because she has a tendency to speak in a way and act in a way that people who are not accustomed to women being in power often associate with the nag
or yes.
the motherly. As someone once said to me, he used his words, the motherly bitch.
Nancy Pelosi got branded with the same brush for a while. Yeah.
And of course, it's interesting because I guess in many ways, some people will consider me maybe not really gender aware. I tend to look at people more as acting entities first, and gender,
heaven forbid,
and such things is more of a secondary consideration. So for me, it's a lot easier to spot, I guess, than for other people, similarities in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way I would see, you know, some at the time, because God, he's gone even more off the rails now. But the way in which Hillary Clinton spoke in these moments where people were like, oh, she's such a bitch.
Yeah.
And say Newt Gingrich.
Yes.
Would speak. They're very similar.
Yes.
And yet people on the right love Newt Gingrich, even though.
Right.
But of course, the moment Hillary Clinton takes on a tone that is very similar to his, she's a harpy. She's a witch.
And that's the thing. In getting back to the whole internet culture thing, even though I claim we never left, there doesn't seem to be an ability to stay. It's like an unstable particle in the Hadron Collider, right? it exists for like a moment where someone can say, you know, I don't think Hillary Clinton is the devil. However, I strongly disagree with her stance on DOMA.
Right.
That's a logical perspective. I totally get that. But that is a fleeting thing. It's only there for a moment on the internet, and then it's gone. It's like either Hillary Clinton was, I mean, there's no figure for it. She was this woman in white, right? Or she's Satan.
Right.
And like logically, of course, she's neither, right? No one is. And as much as I think, you know, the Mitch McConnell is a turtle memes are hilarious, I don't find them terribly helpful either. Because no. That's just making fun of the dude's appearance. It's almost making him seem more cuddly and less nefarious than
he
actually is. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so... It's almost as though, this is my theory about the internet, and it crystallized around the 2016 election, where I dove in. I normally don't like to talk about politics on my YouTube channel. I prefer to keep it with stuff that's, you know, nonpartisan.
Right.
But 2016, I actually covered the election because I wanted to be able to go, I told you so, when the shit hit the fan. Because...
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. It seems like people are terrified of standing up and having an independent opinion. I don't think it's so much that cancel culture or the quote-unquote mob has gotten worse. I think people have just become more afraid of that. I noticed this happened with my younger relatives. That, you know, my nieces and nephews and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Everything became crowd fund, crowd sourced, crowd, you know, like you don't stay in a hotel anymore. You don't crash at a friend's place. You stay at an Airbnb, right?
Right.
And I stayed at Airbnbs twice. I like, what is this? This is weird. This is like Animal House meets Big Brother, you know?
I was there on one of those occasions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it was just so strange for me that, you know, all of a sudden you're cohabitating with a bunch of people you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to act like that's normal. You know, like everything is shared, shared workspaces, shared ride share, you know, home share, spit share. I mean, that's right. It doesn't stop at just spit. But because of all this share, people have become incredibly afraid of ostracization. There's no belief that you can exist as an individual anymore. And I think that's why, this is my theory about why back in my day when I was young, it was Howard Stern. Now it's Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan is no Howard Stern, right? Mm-hmm. Howard Stern did offensive things precisely because they were offensive. And he was exploring in a lot of ways, why is this offensive? You know, and I give Howard Stern a lot of credit for growing up a lot. If you listen to Howard Stern now, he is nowhere near the same dude as he was in the 80s and 90s, right?
Right.
That's what I expect from a human being. Evolution, right? And
I mean, one of my favorite examples of that is David Bowie. Remember I showed you that clip of him almost before he died singing Life on Mars, and his entire artistic persona and take on that was a much more evolved. He did not dress up as Ziggy Stardust.
No, he showed up in a casual suit and he just sang songs with like the set list for a couple times. I remember him in concert going, looking down at his set list and says, I need the words because I'm getting old, you know.
As opposed to Leonard Cohen, who would just invent a whole new stanza because he forgot the old one.
Yep. And I mean, then, you know, people like Paul McCartney, people who have been around for a really long time, they settle into themselves, right?
Yeah.
I don't see Joe Rogan ever settling into them into himself. Not only do his opinions, you know, change like a fart in a windstorm. To evoke one of my grandmother's favorite sayings.
I liked it.
The fart in a windstorm. Yeah, because it's nothing. It was gas to begin with, and now it's dilute gas. And it seems like people just latch onto these figures because they're popular. And then no matter how amorphous or ever-changing their positions are, that's okay as long as they're still popular. Like mm-hmm. I see it with a lot of these YouTube personalities as well. And I say this as one of them. Like, I look at a guy like PewDiePie.
Oh God.
I kind of get it. Well, I kind of get it, right? Like YouTubers are the boy bands of the late 80s and early 90s for this generation. The boy bands of the late 80s and early 90s did not have the talent of boy bands now. Like if you compare them to a group like, what is it, BTS, the Asian kids?
Yeah.
They're really good musically.
Are you attacking my new kids in the block?
Okay, NSYNC definitely better than New Kids in the Block. And I like New Kids in the Block, okay? Back in the day. I was into grunge, but I could never quite quit New Kids in the Block, right? Yeah, okay, I admit that.
It was the common malady of everyone.
And you could No matter
how much you might have hated them, there was always one song of theirs that you liked.
Yeah, the hook. Well, because they didn't write them. They had professional songwriters, right? But I mean, and it wasn't so much that these guys aren't competent performers. You know, Donnie Wahlberg actually went on to be quite a good actor, which is very surprising. He's very good on Blue Bloods. But the caliber was they were pegs put in slots, marketed mm-hmm. to be certain things. And it's not that they were untalented. They just weren't. I have to say this. If you look at what was going on in black music in the 90s, Boyz II Men and Bell Biv DeVoe, those guys sang circles around any white boy band at the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Now, it's kind of the same thing. Let's face it, YouTube personalities are an overwhelmingly white phenomenon. There aren't very many black YouTubers of the profile of, say, a PewDiePie or a Ninja.
Right. That's why, you know, that's why the black comics nerd has to label himself black comics nerd, because right. he is kind of alone in that space.
Well, he's also continuing the tradition of, for some godforsaken reason, every black character in comics must have black in their name, as if nobody notices otherwise.
Yeah.
But it's just...
He lampshades that trope.
Yes, he does. But I mean, it's just like... The libidinous desires of teen girls must find a host in every generation. You know, this is just one of those things that must happen or the universe falls apart. Obviously, I'm being hyperbolic.
There is no Mark, only Zool.
Yeah, exactly. But there has to be a Joey McIntyre or a PewDiePie, you know, and they're all... kind of clean cut, but not totally clean cut. Like, remember when the New Kids on the Block started showing up with, like, beard stubble?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my god, that's so edgy, right? Like, it's the same thing with, like, Ninja's My Little Pony hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, these kids, they call them stans now, and they get this parasocial relationship with these teen heartthrobs that I think part of the appeal is they're kind of flawed, and so they seem sort of attainable, because let's face it, teenage girls have low self-esteem, and so if a guy's too slick, like, you know, George Clooney-level charm, girls are like, he'd never pay attention to me. Guys who are slightly a loser, they're perfect for libidinous teen desires, right? And so we have this phenomenon where now all of a sudden we care about what a guy like PewDiePie or Ninja says. And that's when I go, oh dear God, why do we care? You know, why do we care what PewDiePie and Ninja says? And they're like, oh, because they're influencing the minds of young people. Like, do we actually believe that anybody's gonna think, you know, Nazis are good because PewDiePie does a video that's in poor taste? Like, please tell me no. The silence is frightening me, Mouse. Like, I was never that impressionable, right? I mean, back in the day when Johnny Depp was this bad boy John Waters actor, as opposed to what's going on with him now, my God, what a horror show.
Yeah.
Nobody thought that what Johnny Depp was doing was good. He was a tragic figure even back then, like trashing hotel rooms with Kate Moss.
Right. See, the thing, the reason I had that pause is that you are aware that I know some of the things that are going on in the local furry communities regarding a certain...
Oh, Nazi furry.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so you're coming at it from, no, most people are not affected, but what about the impressionable people who are?
Mm-hmm. Because you know that... I have had reports of him. Of course, he's getting into trouble precisely because he's approaching teenagers.
Right.
But many of those teenagers reportedly think he's a genius. and they sort of fall for his pity story of, I have been so awfully mistreated, which of course preys upon
right.
So many teenagers' insecurity, especially those who may be awkward and feel that they have been rejected in one way or another or ostracized. So, of course, being vulnerable and impressionable, someone like a PewDiePie could very easily become a major influence in how someone thinks. And, of course, that is absolutely frightening.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I think back to the fact that we all knew Kurt Cobain did get cocaine. Sorry, right. Heroin. I was a huge Nirvana fan. Johnny Depp did the cocaine.
You went into the rhyme scheme, so I...
Yeah. But, I mean, Kurt Cobain, we all knew he was a heroin addict. And none of us thought doing heroin was a good idea, because we all knew Cobain was a hot mess, and that was what his music was about a lot of the time. Now, a few kids did start doing heroin. I don't think that was because of Kurt Cobain,
mm-hmm.
you know. Now, you're saying that some, and maybe this falls into my theory that I said earlier, that in being an individual is so scary now that there's greater, I don't know, there's greater perceived need to emulate. I don't know. There's just something different now.
I think, here's the thing. The internet is perhaps one of the greatest inventions in history, and one of the inventions that can have the greatest potential to bring us forward.
Right.
The problem right now is that, as with every invention, as with every new invention,
yeah,
we may not be mature enough at this point to utilize it wisely, because what we have done on the internet is it started off when it was a small enough group of users,
yeah,
back in the early 90s. It started off as a ground for adults. And adults, because I started using the internet when I was 16.
Yeah.
And when you would go into these adult spaces, you had something called netiquette.
Yes.
That you were expected to follow.
Yeah.
The displays that you see on the internet today would not have been tolerated in most Usenet groups.
That's absolutely true.
In most chat boards, in most chat rooms. So what happened is, in many ways, is you had this older generation of users and creators, because, you know, they were the ones who shaped the initial internet.
Right.
And then as technology became more readily available, less expensive, as access grew, the floodgates opened up, and you have this large number of people who, not coincidentally, grew up with a level of education that was in many ways inferior to the one that these users, that the initial set of users had created.
You're talking about people with like BAs who still can't spell?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. In any language, like pick a language, yeah, be able to spell in it, I'll be happy. You don't have one. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we have this very, very different tone between these generations. And so what may have started off as a more adult themed endeavor, because, you know, I remember being able to go into Yahoo chat and having an interesting conversation.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
In
yeah,
the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas towards the end of the days of those chat rooms, it was a horror show.
It all seemed to go to shit with LiveJournal. And I don't know why. Like the LiveJournal MySpace era, that's when things started to change.
Well, because in a way, that's kind of bringing back the infantilization of, because you're not really writing a journal for yourself, which is the point of a journal.
Right.
That's you're a good writing point. You're writing a performative journal. So now, no matter what your age is, you are the teenage boy or girl in his room going, "Dear diary," but now you are broadcasting. That is the beginning of that. And so what we have done is we have recreated the social dynamics and the social spheres of influence of high school on the internet. And that is, at this point, the reason why critical thinking and debate goes to die on the internet. Because right now, outside of a very small number of people, there is no adult discourse going on. President Trump tweets like a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah. That kind of makes sense, I guess, because guys like Ninja, PewDiePie, Joe Rogan, they're the jocks in the high school. People like Alinity and Lori Loughlin's daughter, they're the Stacys, for lack of a better term. You know, it does certainly emulate a giant online high school.
Right, and you have the more thoughtful people, such as Pushing Up Roses, you know, she doesn't have as large a following as some of these dumbasses.
Yeah, even somebody like, what's her name, ContraPoints? She has to have so many gimmicks instead mm-hmm. of just, she's got a good brain. I am repelled by the gimmickry.
And here's the thing, you know, she's a thorough, total Marxist.
Yes.
But I respect her.
Because I keep thinking there's hope that one day she'll just see the error in her thinking and you know, because ContraPoints would not be allowed to be contrapoints in any historical Marxist regime ever.
Right. And even if she doesn't, she is still someone I know I could sit down and have a respectful disagreement and a respectful conversation with. But so you've got those, you know, those circles who are maybe not as high a high follower, but then of course on the other side you have the people who pander, who have massive followings, like Jim Sterling.
but he's a high school trope too, right?
He's a high school trope. He's a high school clown in many ways.
Well, he's what's his name from Stranger Things. The chubby kid that always hangs around with the more cool kids.
Oh, gosh.
He's kind of a nerd. He's kind of a, you know, like, it's that trope, like mm-hmm. the chunk from Goonies.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's not a cool kid, but he's on the periphery of the cool kids because he's friends with one of the cool kids. Like,
right.
Even that fits in. And he's going the way that trope always goes. He has to mm-hmm. virtue signal harder and harder and harder to maintain his peripheral association to the cool kids.
Right. So in the matter, in the way that we perpetuate these high school stereotypes, we are not going to advance any meaningful discourse, because I am sorry for those of you who had meaningful discourses in high school. You are in the vast minority, because the teenage brain just often doesn't work like that, because it's awash with hormones and still growing and will not be fully formed until you hit your 20s, which is, I think, is an absolute tragedy.
I'm one of those people who had excellent conversations. I had some great teachers. In high school, high school was a best of times, worst of times scenario for me, mm-hmm. but there were best of times, and that's because I had really great teachers, and, you know, that's super important. What your theory indicates, though, is that the problem is not the internet. The problem is what we've done to the internet.
Yeah, the problem lies at the heart of the culture, and here's the thing. We have bad education going on right now. Mm-hmm. We also have this mentality, which is uniquely American, because from what I have spoken to with my American friends, etc., this notion that your high school days are in many ways some of the most important days of your life.
Oh Lord, yes, that's very American.
And that creates, because I didn't have that growing up. Most of us are like, oh God, I can't wait for this to be over.
Yeah.
This is like, I can't wait to be. The mentality was, I can't wait to go out into the real world, because this is all of us were aware, even though I had excellent education, we were all aware that this was more of a house, of an isolated environment.
Despite what I said about having really great teachers, I agree. That was my frame on high school.
And the problem with this romanticism of high school is that it creates this emotional attachment where people want to recreate this outside, especially if you peaked, so to speak, during that era. If you were the popular cheerleader, if you were the popular jock, or if you were the popular kid, you'll notice, like, these Karens, they are the logical consequence, the logical outcome of holding these types of interactions and these types of social dynamics as a sort of template for the rest of society. And for how you should conduct your adult life. So I think the biggest problem, instead of the fact that, you know, Americans are not taught critical thinking, they're not taught philosophy, they're not given the tools with which to arm themselves against any type of collectivized thinking, is also that they, as a society here, the average American is infantilized.
Yep.
In social interactions, in intellectual interactions. And so what we have now, on the internet is nothing more than the perpetuation of these templates, these psychological and emotional templates. So the reason why the internet is the place where thinking goes to die is because it's nothing. In many ways, it's a very, very intimate mirror. You used to go to the internet to create a persona in many ways and interact with people. Well, that has been broken.
That's a good point.
In many ways.
That's a good point.
Here's the thing. I forget his name, Zizek, the Marxist philosopher. I don't agree with most of what he says, but he does have an excellent point regarding the use of masks, which is something Terry Pratchett picked up on very well. And they say that the mask hides your face, and that's true, but it only hides the face on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
When people wear masks, they find it incredibly liberating, because in many ways, and this is what, say, in the furry community, fursuiters like about wearing their full body suits, because somehow by adopting this performative persona, they feel that they can actually be themselves. And the internet is now the mask in many ways, because you might know who this person is, you know, Joe Rogan goes online, etc., but he's not talking face to face with you.
Right.
You're not there talking to face. So there is a mask condition happening at that moment. So when we have a highly infantilized society, and highly infantilized people, they put on the mask, even though everybody knows who they are, they feel liberated. They feel that they can be this infantilized person to their fullness. And then so they become this sort of signifier, this symbol for other people who sort of want to act in this way. In many ways, it's the reliving of those high school days, but now it's on a greater significance, because you don't have a high school class of 100, 200, 300 people who know who you are and who know what nonsense you might get up to, because even if it's nonsense, it still gets you applause. Now it's hundreds of thousands or even millions.
All right, we'll have to stop there, because we are out of time and we have to both go be grown-ups, ironically enough. Sorry to cut this short, but this has been the Broken Clock Podcast on the FU Network, funetwork.tv. Become a patron, check out our merchandise, yada, yada, yada. Mouse, as usual, you have the last word.
Don't be afraid to step outside of the crowd, and always be suspect of any interaction that requires you to essentially enact one of the tropes you might have enacted in high school, because that might not be helping you grow.
FU stands for us, you and me, and this is fun, the FU Network.